seen and treated in the emergency department but are waiting for a hospital bed. Now, obviously, the next group of patients who need to be seen because you have patients on trolleys taking up spaces, those patients will be delayed, and eventually not alone do you have people waiting for a long period of time to get a hospital bed, but you have patients waiting for a long period of time to be seen by emergency department staff, which is unacceptable. You mentioned that there was over 8,600 waiting for more than 24 hours for a bed, but I think what's particularly worrying is the fact that there are so many patients over 75. So 2,700 of these patients were over 75, and we know these patients do particularly badly if they're forced to wait in a trolley for more than 12 hours, much less more than 24 hours.
And yet the situation persists. Why?
Well, I think at the most fundamental level, the government has been telling us, that the previous government was telling us on a monthly basis for a year, so that the situation was improving, that they were seeing improvements, even though the experience of people on the ground was that there was no evidence of improvement. As you have pointed to, the fact that the January figures would have been available in the first week of February, and the February figures available in the first week of March, and both were published in May, tells you something about the mentality of those people responsible for this information. So we have a situation where the news is bad, the news is getting worse, and that information is being suppressed. So this is one issue. The second is...
May I, before we move on, though, Doctor, to the second issue, who do you feel would be responsible for suppressing that information? Who would be pulling the strings?
Well, the HSE is responsible for its own performance information. Now, whether or not somebody suggested that it would be in their interest not to publish it, I don't know. I can't comment on that. But the HSE published their own performance information.
If that were the case, it would be truly a national scandal.
Well, the situation of overcrowding
is
a national scandal.
I understand.
And it was declared a national emergency as long ago as March 2006. So, you know, we have had a problem that's been allowed to get worse. We have patients who have been allowed to die as a result, and there's incontrovertible evidence that this has happened. And yet, people are more interested in giving the impression of improvement or suppressing information to suggest that the situation is getting worse. I mean, we need to go and fix this, because otherwise more of our citizens, more of our relatives, more of our, you know, by and large, they're people of my mother's age. So these are people in their 70s and 80s. They're the ones that are most likely to end up in a trolley, and they're the ones most likely to die as a result of that.
But the measures that have been introduced, correct me if I'm wrong, to deal in some way or other with overcrowding emergency departments are having a terrible effect on other services or other areas of the hospital, so we're doing it wrong already.
Well, there's a couple of issues. One is that the number of patients in hospital beds, what are called delayed discharges, number of patients whose acute medical care was finished but need to go to a facility in the community or could go home with the support of appropriate home help, or other community supports, that number reached over 800, or something in the order of 870 patients. The efforts taken last year, just the end of last year, reduced that number to something in the order of 330, but that number is going up again. So this is something that needs to be done and has no impact on elective activity. So when you're talking about impact on other services, you're talking about elective activity being affected. I think we need to face up to the basic problem, is which we don't have enough capacity to do both. So until such time as we create the capacity, and creating the capacity means further wards or beds are in places where wards or beds have been closed to be reopened and staffed, until such time as we achieve that, then we have to look at which patients carry the greater risk. The evidence, incontrovertibly again, is that a patient waiting on a trolley is at greater risk than somebody who needs a hip replacement or a hernia repair or whatever. Now, I don't want to see any of those patients discommoded, but I know that if you're looking at it purely from a risk perspective, then it's obvious where the greater risk is. But our basic problem is we simply don't have enough capacity, and no amount of hoping the problem will go away is going to solve the problem. We didn't even have the capacity before austerity started, and yet during the period of austerity, 2,000 hospital beds were closed. So is it any wonder we have the mess that we're in now.
So what do we do? I mean, I find it unimaginable that we have a situation where older people who've contributed so much to this country are having their lives cut short because of the health system as it is, and yet there's talk of there being some money available for spending here and there and everywhere. It doesn't. I can't see how the two can coexist. If there's money, spend it on saving people's lives.
Absolutely, and I mean, these are ultimately political decisions. Now, interestingly, during the general election campaign, the two issues that the public were most taken with were the state of the health service, particularly access to hospital beds, and homelessness. Yet neither of them were big issues in the political party's approach to the health to the election campaign, and certainly in the context of the programme for government, there is very little written about health, and apart from a commitment to do a review, I might add, of bed capacity when the dogs in the street know there's a shortage of bed capacity.
Just phone you up. If they phone you up, you can tell them that. They don't need to do a review.
That's exactly the point, is that they need to get on with fixing the problem. But there seems to be an unwillingness to face up to the extent of the problem. It's only when, and I hope it doesn't happen, but it's only when some senior figure in Irish society loses a loved one as a direct result of emergency department crowding, a bit like Brendan Gleeson did some years ago and went on the Late Late Show to talk about it. It's only when that starts happening to people who have the capacity to influence politics in this country. At the moment, the people who are dying, and there are people dying as a result of emergency department overcrowding, are essentially part of a silent group who don't have the capacity to influence politics in the way it should be influenced.
But those that do influence probably have the capacity not to have to sit around an A&E.
No, well, actually, to be fair, the emergency departments all around the country are probably the only place where you have a one-tier health system.
There is private ones, but you know far better than I. But
sure, but the only private facilities available are going to be that the Galway Clinic has one, which is 160 miles from Letterkenny, and in Dublin, which is 140 miles away. So by and large, for patients in the area that your listeners are in, or the area that I work in, this isn't an option available to them.